So I have to know, how are you feeling after that loss?
I'm going to assume you're talking about football or soccer, as us heathens call it. I wasn't aware of it.
Yes, the soccer is.
Right, yeah. Zero awareness. So.
Do you actually call them that, or is that like a thing that we, our stupid broadcast people, call them?
Socceroos? Yeah, I suppose we call them that.
Proper name?
Yeah, that's the name of them.
It sounds a little bit like mocking.
It does a little bit, doesn't it? Did we lose? What happened?
You did lose.
To you?
I'm glad it's not the other way around.
Were you invested, Justin? Did you go to the pub
really,
and watch the game?
Like the one sport I care somewhat about anymore is...
Wow.
Is football, soccer.
Cool.
And yeah, I don't know. There's a weird, like, I don't know how it's reported outside of the States, I guess, but all of my social media and reporting is that people are surprised as visitors to the United States at how nice the people have been and the stadiums have been. And I'm kind of the same way. I'm like, didn't really expect that to be the reaction, but I'm glad it is. It feels nice.
My level of awareness of the World Cup was, I knew it was on, but I had to ask someone the other day what country it was on, like where it was being held. I didn't realize it was
in three countries too.
Split across three countries, which is pretty cool.
Right.
I was impressed to learn that. But yeah, that's the extent of my involvement, unfortunately. I loved it as a kid.
I'm enjoying, I think the best phrasing I've heard is the Great American Sleepover. So it's like people are generally on all sides seem to enjoy, like the Scottish were in Boston and they were just playfully causing a ruckus, like putting cones on statues' heads, and apparently drank all the beer at multiple like pubs, and just all around just seems positive and good so far, which is just not what I expected. Not at all what I expected.
Oh, that's good.
Because we are not traditionally a soccer country. So I thought like the fields were going to be trash and like, you know, everybody's going to be complaining about how Americans don't know what to do with this football.
Awesome.
I'm glad you're not sad.
No, not sad.
Still.
All good. Still here.
Good.
I'm awake. I got my coffee.
Me what too. You doing? I'm still drinking coffee.
What you doing over there, Justin?
I was looking at an upload from a client.
Yeah. In our shop?
I'm adding to the shop board. Not yet. Painfully. No. Not yet. Soon.
Okay. Where are you quoting? Are you still in quotient? Yeah.
Same thing. It's just like, I haven't flipped a switch on enough of those, like moved all that stuff over at once. And
oh, it's a pain to migrate
need
such
to just
things.
Put the mind, the brain power and time into like finishing that up for us. So
I emailed quotient last week and I said, hey guys, I know I've asked you this before, but like any sense of like whether you're going to put an MCP, like a proper API on your roadmap? Because like I emailed you a year ago and like saying that I think this is coming and you need to think about this. You were like, no at the time, but I sent them another email saying, hey, I feel like this is even like becoming even more pertinent to my workflow, like anything on the roadmap. I haven't heard back from them. It's annoying because I really like their product, but I think I'm going to end up in a spot pretty soon where I'm like, I just need that workflow. Well, I don't need, I want that workflow. Yeah. Like I want to be able to throw, like the other day I was quoting 2 days ago, I was quoting this job, this massive PDF. It's for my, kind of for my one remaining commercial client. That's, you know, like multi-page PDF, heaps of units that need quoting, all different quantities across different sites and jobs. And I just desperately wanted to be able to throw that at an agent and say, hey, just give me the draft in quotient, like all the quantities, all the copy, and then I can go in and fiddle with it and adjust pricing. And I don't want you to price it necessarily. I just want the grunt work done. So, yeah, I feel like my days are limited with Quotient because I'm going to run out of patience with things like that, with the, how much my workflow has changed around those processes.
So you're saying I need to add MCP to Airshop?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, it depends what your API, like it depends what webhooks or API connections it's got, I suppose. Like,
yeah, I've had that thought a lot, and I keep not going down that route. It just feels like I haven't felt the need for it yet.
Mm.
But I get what you're saying with, like, I think quoting more than anything would be the most useful. We were just talking today about how to interact. We also haven't tried to sync up external databases at all with like Shopify or VQuo. And I think today was the first day we had actually talked about that at PDX CNC, that it could be useful, like mostly in regards to like managing purchase orders and like receiving orders and stuff like that. Like we are still at a place where we're going to have two loggings, right? It's like we may make a purchase order in VQuo. Are we going to make a purchase order also in Airshop? And then like, is there a main place? And then I've never wanted to like sync the quantities back and forth. Like I don't have a need for that in Airshop, but also I can see like people would want that, right? Like you want it all to be the same. So
yeah, ideally you want one centralized data source, right? So like, yeah. which bit of that,
right,
is Airshop going to be the master of? It is inventory, right?
Right. So yeah, if you were tracking inventory, would you have it? Because like one of the big things that was nice about VQuo when we moved to it was being able to, which we don't sell a ton, but like through multiple Etsy shops and then multiple Shopify shops, like we can track, like I can list things across all those and have their counts sync. Like if I sold one product across four stores, you don't want to track four quantities and make that sync together. So I don't know. It's a lot of ins and outs that it feels overly complicated to try to be the master of that.
Yeah. I mean, it is complicated, but I guess, yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, what are you up to?
What have I been doing? Lots of late nights. So we're finishing the machining on Laura's sculpture commission at the moment, which installs in about 3 weeks. So it's kind of a bit of a pinch in production. Regretting selling our second CNC because we could really do with a second machine right now. But that's going to be a short-lived pain because Laura's job will be soon done. So at the moment, Laura's are quite complex, fiddly, solid timber parts. I don't particularly want to machine them. So Johnny's doing all of Laura's parts by day and then some butter stuff. And then I'm coming in doing night shift and running like just standard easy butter machining.
Yep.
And that's working quite well. It means we're keeping up, but it means I'm kind of doing night shift a few nights a week, which for the most part I've been enjoying. Get the machines humming and then noodle around improving the dispatch. The spaceship that I've been working on, which has been satisfying, making some improvements and trying to make dispatch more efficient because I feel like that's one of our big weak points at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going well. And what else? I don't know.
Get some big updates on your builder that's live now, right?
I've been doing,
I don't remember the name for it. Designer? used to be configurator.
The Kidded Parts Builder. Yeah, yeah.
You can only tell me a name of something once, and then I can't remember anything else after that.
Sorry. Yeah, I've made heaps of updates to all three builders over the last week or so. They've now got a 3D preview, and like the Kidded Parts one can do like multi-depth stuff now as well, so you can make sort of more complex. Basically, it's part of my sort of effort to streamline my quoting time. A week or so ago, I got an agent to just like crawl the inbox over the last 4 months and like identify what are like the top customizations for this product line. Like what are the most requested changes in terms of the things that I'm then manually doing in Rhino? Let's think about baking in, you know, the top four of those into the configurator so customers can do it themselves. And so that's, you know, that was why I added the multi-depth stuff and a bunch of other little features and changes so that customers can do more of that themselves or just get their designs closer to it, that final point. Oh, he's got it up on screen. Let's watch him try and drive it.
Yeah, come watch me build while Jim talks.
So yeah, I've been integrating a bunch of changes into that configurator, but also the other one, the shelves one. So they've all got 3D preview now, which works pretty well.
This is crazy. It's like, so you made it like, or like, just kind of stepping aside of how simple you're making it seem that like now you have this multi-split view where you can build it in 2D and it's just live updating on the side, the 3D view with shadows, and I'm spinning it around.
I think the most satisfying moment, I think the sort of the moment I swore out loud in satisfaction was when the door opened when I clicked on it in the 3D preview.
Yes.
Because I've been dreaming of those doors for years. I think
did you since tell it to do that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So if you click into the 3D
preview.
I didn't
look into it. Door should open.
Doors open.
I
think, you know, since I first discovered Tilco, that Polish, you know, shelving configuration company like six years ago or something. I've been dreaming about that door feature ever since.
You've got materials. Did you provide the materials or did it find?
Yeah, I provided maps and it modified them a little bit. But yeah, no, it's working really well. I've had good feedback from customers. I'm worried a little bit that by adding more and more features, I'll overwhelm some users, but I'm trying to sort of do it in such a way that not all of those advanced, like you haven't discovered the depth feature yet in your little fiddling around there, which I kind of like.
We'll get there.
I don't want to overwhelm people.
UI is hard, man.
Oh no, it's real hard. Almost want someone to sort of ask me at this stage of like, hey, can I make these deeper? It's like, yeah, select a shelf and it'll present those options to you. So
there we go.
So yeah. I don't know. But UI is hard. Like I was watching one of your Airshop reels this morning as I was making coffee. I was thinking like, damn, you've put so much work
in. Damn, that's a
bad UI. No, but like visually at least. I haven't clicked around it much, but like with the screenshots and the videos and like the stuff I see of Airshop online, it's like, damn, it looks nice, like visually consistent.
Thanks.
And I find myself thinking the same thing with the like the web apps and that John's making, Johnny in-house here. He's primarily a Claude code user. And everything that he produces is just like, I can tell Claude's made that, but also that's tasty. Whereas I feel like the stuff I'm making in Cursor is a bit of a dog's breakfast by default, and then I have to like work really hard to make it look any good. I don't know.
I see it now. I see what you're talking about.
Yeah.
My as we're doing live design review.
Please.
please come watch the YouTube. You can see this happening. My gut feeling, while amazing, is just make it all 3D. You could start with 2D and then have a button that makes it wiggly, right? Like you can change it and then I can just edit live in the 3D view.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not simple.
You want to be able to click into the 3D view and delete something or change it. Yeah.
I just kind of immediately go, oh, hmm. And then I would do the view. I would do like a fusion style view cube where or a button at the bottom that says like click front and I can go back to front and then I can just quickly spin it again. I think that will, well, it'll take it into a whole new realm of like amazing. Like you've already got this nice thing, but I think it complicates the UI to be potentially you need to be a little bit more of an advanced user to what is this on the side here? How do you move it around? And I just know because
you're a CAD user,
right?
Yeah. Fair point.
There's another few like UI things that I think there's a lot of elegance in hiding things until you need them.
Mm-hmm.
So like that it's not all immediately showing you like undo and clear and stuff like that, like before you've begun at all to kind of bring down the, like there's too many things to take in right away. But other than that, it's you know, you've got all the tools now. It's just, how do you present it? Like my brother does, you know, app design. He's now like a senior designer at a tech company. And that's always his comments like, oh, there's a lot going on there, man. You know, like tone it down. What do they need to see right now? You know, in this moment, like their little interstitials hide the things or in a drop down or, you know, all those things. But otherwise, super cool. So cool to see it in like in 3D view and have the proper materials and stuff is so good.
No, it's a really good point. Now I just want to open Cursor and like pause the podcast for a second.
Let's
just
do it. Let's do it. Get it open.
Brief in some UI thoughts. No, I think that point particularly.
Let me type in your cursor.
I'll just enable that. That point particularly rings true of like, what are you showing straight off the bat? Like the undo, what you said about the undo button is like, of course the undo button doesn't need to be there.
Yeah.
Like as the app opens for someone for the first time. That I feel like that's the most critical point for me is when someone opens this as a first-time user, they're not familiar with the product. Like, what the hell do they do first? And how do they quickly get a satisfying experience so that they want to keep fiddling and building without just bouncing off the site?
Yeah.
So,
Or you could do like, I hate a wizard and stuff like that, but you could do a very, very, very simple splash screen type thing where it's like, pick one of two or pick one of three things. Like, do you want to watch a video on how to do this? Do you want to see an example that you can easily clear, right? Like you already got presets, like pick a random one, drop it in for them. Or do you just want to start on your own blank slate? And then you'll kind of get a way for each user type to maybe pick, but maybe they'll hate that too. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've played with it enough. It's not hard for me to quickly get into it.
Yeah, well, you've seen the whole evolution, I suppose. You're familiar
with
it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right, but it's so cool.
Yeah. Cheers. It's good fun. It's good. It's good.
If I got to close this, you should do that too. Add in like are you sure you want to close this tab thing?
The detection where you can see when someone's approaching the
It saved it though. So I just think it was going to wipe it. Well. So at least you got it saved. Dude, amazing.
Thanks, man. Thanks for the live review. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. So I've been doing that.
Blah, blah, blah.
That's I got FedEx integration working from my ERP. That was super satisfying as well.
Dang.
Right.
That was another sort of moment when that first label printed. Automatically, it's like, oh shit, so satisfying.
Because you posted this like story or just a regular reel or something on Instagram, and I commented back like, I asked you what your screen was that you were like running on the little desktop screen or something. And you were like, oh yeah, it's our, what do you call it? Not a dashboard, but
HQ mission control. Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then somehow we were talking about you having FedEx integrated or like, and I was like, oh my, oh, I said, are you shipping from there too? And you're like, yeah. And I was like, oh my God, that's crazy. It's like, my mind reels to try to integrate that. I feel like yours is such a more streamlined set of products. Like, are they preset? Like, are you able to just like use any of FedEx's things or are they presets?
Not doing presets. I've tried to build it in such a way that the system will learn like what a Kitaparts 303, like what cartons a Kitaparts 303 will ship in. So that next time we're booking one of those, it'll go, what were the carton sizes for a 303 last time we shipped one? And at least draft the carton sizes for you. But like, because so many of our products are configurable now, we're finding that there's not much repeatability. It's like, yes, we have repeatability in cartons and boxes that we make, but almost everyone's order is subtly different in terms of the output. So I've just tried to make a simple, clean interface where you can walk up to the dispatch station, scales are right, and trying to put everything in arm's reach. Scales are there, chuck your package on, measure it, dump the weights and dimensions in, click quote in that same interface, does the FedEx API call, book it, the label prints automatically, boom, boom, boom. It's just like just trying to draw all of that together. So yes, still got to weigh the package, still got to measure it, input that data. But I mean, I'm dreaming about like having some sort of vision system now where you can just throw the carton on the scales and the webcam, you know, OpenCV little webcam goes beep, beep, beep. Oh, it's this big and just inputs the numbers automatically for you. But
Dude, that's so that just came up. We have more issues than we used to. Just it's a scale with how many orders we've been shipping. It's going with it, but it's still very few. Like we had a weird scenario where a shipment was like from our big sale arrived like a week after the sale and the customer emailed us like a week ago. So it's quite a few weeks. Like, hey, when were we going to get one of these parts, the parts in here, it came with a set of stuff. And we were like, oh yeah, it was all shipped, you know? And you go into this crazy mode of how we don't have any way to 100% know that's true. It's based on Ricky's memory of shipping 150 product or orders that month. And that we normally do something always this way, so we wouldn't have shipped it separate. And then somewhere between UPS telling us that our package was improperly closed and they're not going to take any claims of missing, you know, very expensive missing product inside of it. And then it's like, is the customer making it up at this big facility that somebody took it out of the package? And like, we don't have any way to prove it. And so one of the conversations goes back to something I think maybe Saunders brought up was like, do we have a webcam? Does every package get photographed before it goes out?
I was trying to remember. I've seen this in a YouTube video. Is it Henry Holster's one with like a dispatch station where you press a button and it's like an overhead webcam and it takes a photo of the box or something?
Maybe that's it. Like
I've seen that in maybe one of his videos. Yeah, I had the same thought, which it's just hard though. Like our carton sizes range between like 2 meters and 300 millimeters. It's just like
you need like a ceiling mounted telephoto.
Yeah.
It takes like a 10 meter area that you can like crop in. That might work. I mean, ours don't get that big, but it's also like it's I've had the thought enough where I'm starting to go like, I don't know, man. It might be, we might need it. But then I think about how much that will break and how many times somebody will come in and go, it's not working. What do I do?
Is it a problem?
We're not using it.
Is it a problem? Like, how often are you getting a customer have that issue? And in reality, how often, say, you know, worst case scenario, 1 in 10 customers is like, hey, there's not enough fucking tags in my box. Where's the rest of my tags? Yep. How, and then within that 1-10%, like, how often are you actually going to argue in that situation and not send them? Like, you're always just going right. to chuck more in a box and send them, right? Like,
this was the problems one we kind of took a new thing, because it's the problem is usually like, oh, we shipped the wrong ear, call it. It was 32 instead of 16. I got too many quarter inch. I should have had that. And it's like under 5 a month. And once again, it's like when something's just missing, though, it's like, are they telling us the truth? We don't have a proof of it being in the box, you know, like, and after enough, you know, this, the thing I'm referencing is like a $200 product, cost wise, at least, just being missing. It was really weird that, like, it just doesn't make sense that we would miss putting it in the box. And so, but yeah, what are you going to do? Say you're lying? I don't know. Like, there's just like,
yeah, exactly.
There's the other side of that where VQO can, and other systems too, force you to scan every item in like a picking mode. And we discussed that too. I've thought about that, but also there's so many things that we don't have a barcode on that now we're having to put a barcode on so we can scan so that we can fix 5 orders a month out of 150. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
That also seems crazy.
Yeah, I think there's a real temptation now that, like, we have these incredible tools available to us that we can, what is it, like a hammer? Everything's a hammer. What's that expression? Yeah. How does that work?
Everything's an AI hammer.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, like even just that impulse I had of like, oh, I'll add a vision system so I can, it's like, no, dude, like, just measure the box. Like, until it's a problem,
right?
Just carry on. Solve the other problems first.
One defense of that, though, is Ricky and I have had these discussions, and I've been probably like anxiety future tripping slash foreseeing, oh, when we grow, this will be a bigger and bigger yeah, problem. And that's
valid. Know,
it was slow. And then we like doubled our orders in a month, and it's kind of stayed. And it's like, okay, the trend is we're still growing, and I project we will continue to, we're going to add 50 more orders a month, you know, in a year, basically. Yeah. So it's going to keep becoming more of a problem. And what do you do? Like, what is the long-term plan? And I don't know. I don't have anything specific yet. So just kind of ruminating on what all the things are, and also trying to make things anymore that when they break, it's not just Justin fixing it or it doesn't work anymore. And then we stop using, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it's hard to make those kind of solutions, but
yeah, no, I get that. Yeah, I don't know what's changed, but like we've got a lot of sort of pressure and seemingly more pressure in dispatch at the moment. Maybe that's just because things are going well and we're shipping more orders. Just feels like mid-year now we've got, that's more of an issue, more of a backlog. Like yesterday I was supposed to have the kids, but I ended up at work for a fair bit of the morning just helping get orders out the door because Thursday's our big shipping day. And it's like, I've done that the last few Thursdays and it feels like we've just got to, you know, everyone's noticing that on the team. Like Rowan last week was like, hey, do we need a casual to come in Wednesdays and just help us box everything up and get
a casual?
And I was like, no, I don't, I really don't want to hire. Like we just need to get more efficient. Like absolutely do not want to hire anybody right now. Like we just need to make this process more efficient and like work out what the pain points are. And you know, that's a big priority for me with this dispatch rebuild. But yeah, it felt like it felt almost mean in the moment of like one of my staff making a suggestion like that of like, do we need help? And me just immediately being like, nope, don't want it. I think we can do XYZ.
Right.
But, you know, you're saying like that's our job is to look forward and think about that stuff of what it will look like and if we keep growing.
It's felt nice to actually have that come true instead of,
true.
You know, me saying, you know, like, you know, what happens when we double? Because like that was some lesson of early lean for me was, you know, if you can, you think about cutting it in half or doubling it, you know, like what, think bigger than your current 10% improvement situation and how are you going to solve that situation. So I'm always doing that. It's like, well, either taking it away or doubling it. What if we double orders? What do we do then? And so now we actually can talk about those things without it being like, Justin's crazy. We're not going to double our orders.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, it happens sometimes. No, it's all right. We had a really nice little win that has been around for probably at least 3 months, 4 months that I'm aware of. And we kept having this weird scenario where customers, and in two situations that I'm aware of, had ordered from us before and went to go order again, different product, slightly different variants, I think, of like tool tags or tool tag towers, I think. And then I think that was all they were ordering, both situations. Both have made an order previous. And the second time they tried to order, they were told in every situation that their address wasn't shippable by Shopify.
Yeah.
And so we even went down the path of like, finally, we had to like make a invoice that they could pay outside of Shopify the first time, because I went through all of the shipping options, their house, their home. And I was like, what? Like, why? What is wrong with this, you know, this address? And thinking that they had the address wrong slightly, which some of them did. Some of them did have like slightly off their proper address. Couldn't figure it out. Second customer, we're like, okay, this is at least the second, maybe the third. Like, this is strange. And the specific thing was a BT30 tool tag tower. And so finally, our shop coordinator is like, all right, let's go talk to Shopify support and see if they can help us, like anything they've changed that might be causing weird, like I just kept thinking, like, I don't have control over how Shopify picks if you can ship to it or not. Like, yep. I can't change that. I can like set shipping rates, but and so the support was like asking us all these questions, like, did you change anything on your website in the last 3 months? And I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, we did, like a million things. I don't know. How am I supposed to know? There's no change log anywhere. And you know, I was getting really frustrated. It was like a bunch of really obvious questions that I couldn't answer, kind of going back and forth. And so I just popped onto Sidekick and was like, we've had this weird problem with this, you know, these couple customers and these here's their carts. And in like two bouts of questions, it figured it out. And it's now just kind of like a blanket question, is it 430 pounds? Because this 1-to-21 tool tag tower was set to 430 pounds, not 430 grams. And that was the problem for everything, is we didn't have a shipping solution for over 400 pounds.
No.
And Sidekick figured it out before our support did.
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
And I was like, anything else like this you see across the app? Like, can you see if we have any other stupid shipping situations? Mm. But I would say also it's really bad error system management. Like, it should have told the customer or us that was what the deal was, not just like, we can't ship to you.
Yeah, there's something wrong here. Do you have like live shipping quotes when customers checking out, like that's connected to your shipping provider? Mm-hmm. And it's
Shopify's in America. They do,
you get it in
whatever
Shopify,
the plan
you?
We're on. Yeah. It's just the basic plan.
And is, and like, will cost just change, be like variable depending on what the customer is trying to order?
And their location, yep.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it's nice.
But that's all baked into Shopify for you.
In the version we're using, you can get other tiers of like using your providers, and I can still change the rates, like, I've got them cranked way low, like the markup or markdown. Like, most of ours are marked down.
Yeah.
Because we very intentionally try to not make any money on shipping. But
yeah,
I went through all of the settings like a million times before that, and it was the product, not the shipping settings. It's like funny in the end.
I mean, you've connected your, you've got the Shopify MCP now, right?
Yes.
You got that working? Did that find
that
the error in terms of the product weight being off?
It probably would have, but I didn't go to that for, I don't use, this weird answer. I don't use, I basically only use Cursor on my laptop, and I was on my desktop at work. And so I opened Sidekick.
What?
It just gets the rules and settings and stuff and syncing if I'm in the middle of editing. Just
doesn't. Yeah, fair enough.
My brain just doesn't. So I just carry my laptop around everywhere.
But no, anyway, that makes sense. Yeah. Makes sense.
So the Sidekick, they've also just made a bunch of updates too, again. And it's just like you can make customers now with Sidekick. Like, but yeah, it found it. It was great. You know,
right.
They're just replacing their customer support people, basically, you know?
Yep. Yeah, I've been going back and forth with someone in customer support at FedEx over the last week, just sorting out some niggles in the API connection. Turns out you got to do about 3 or 4 API calls for every booking. So, like, you book the freight, but then you both do a separate call to book the driver to make sure that they turn up, and then another one to notify the customer that something's been shipped. Anyway, it took me a while to sort all of that out. All good. And one of them still has not quite working. Anyway, so I've been emailing back and forth with someone at FedEx in their, you know, tech support team. And she's been really good, but it's also a little bit like self-help. She just keeps sending me often, not every time, but often she'll just send me the API PDF and be like, have you actually read this? I'm like, no, but my agent's read it and my team's read it and proposed XYZ. Like, why is it not still working? Can you check? Blah, 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 blah. But I was thinking, like, her job, unfortunately, I feel like would be better served right now by an agent with API documentation. Unfortunately.
Right.
Because I'm getting answers that are not that useful to me. And I'm just getting, like, API docs spat back at me. I'm like, no, I want you to analyze my code samples that I'm sending you and work out where the gap is.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway. Yeah. An unfortunate reality, but what do you got? Can I throw a profit first question at you?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, breaking the third wall for a second, but like if you're a long-time listener of the show, you'll know that Justin and I both adopted the profit first cash management system a couple of years ago.
Are you quitting profit first?
No, hell no, never. But I've got a problem in my system. I've got too much money, darling. No, I've had a deposit come through yesterday for an unusually big job for us.
Okay, I can and guess. Yeah.
So I did my weekly distribution on Wednesday. It's now Friday morning, 2 days later, and I've now got 3 weeks of budget sitting in my distribution account. So I'm, triple my weekly income target has already been hit.
Mm-hmm.
If I distribute that next week, it's just my percentages are just going to freak out and put a huge amount of money into my materials account. And I'm not sure what else, mainly my, it's just going to end up with this hugely bloated materials account for a job that I'm not going to start making for at least 2 weeks, and I'm not going to be paying for materials because of credit accounts for at least a month. I'm not quite sure how to deal with it. Do I just keep it in my income account and then just like drip feed, just do like my normal target distribution next week and the week after that and the week after that, like spread it? I think makes sense to me,
what's the harm of just moving it and it just sits in those accounts because you'll spend it? I'm thinking it's not earmarked.
Oh, you mean kind of do 3 distributions at once?
Like, I mean, it's just such an interesting flip of our two like systems that like mine just happens. So I don't choose when it's a time thing. And so I'm not going to say yours is wrong, but it makes me feel like you can break the rules easily. My system's rules, you know, it's like.
Well, yeah, if we're using your system, it would just apply its default percentages to the whole lot and then you'd just deal with it, right?
Yeah, make some either you could do it two ways. You could move the other way, right? If you don't let it automatically happen, I know I have a big payment I need to make that's appropriate. I need to move that money before it distributes, or do it after.
I mean, moving money pre-distribution feels like the most illegal thing in the system.
Ever.
Yeah, like I've made myself really like adverse to doing that. I can't, the idea.
But isn't it illegal to do it late too?
But is it late? I guess it is. Yeah. Like my temptation right now is think of it as 3 weeks of revenue sitting there, and I'll drip feed it through my percentage system 1 week at a time every week. So I'll just leave my income account topped up, and I'll drip feed like a full allocation through each week. And I know I shouldn't, but I know this is going to make me back off my sales efforts for a couple of weeks and put focus elsewhere into, like, I'll justify it and I'll say, hey, this is going to give me more time to, like, improve the web tools so we get more, you know, low effort conversions, like more web sales and less custom work.
And I think by saying it out loud, you've answered yourself. You need to transfer it. You need to distribute it now. Because here's my answer to that, though. You are doing a version of the old system before Profit First. You're using a slush fund.
Yeah, true.
You're trying to manage it yourself by not moving it. And so I guess by having it distribute and then transferring it after, it feels like it's removing your preferences and let's say normalized laziness, like whatever you want. Like everybody has that. It's like comfort in the money being there.
Okay, so if I distribute all of, damn you, I distribute all of it next week and then sales pressure is back on, it means I've just had a really good week, but then the pressure's straight back on to hit distribution amount the following week. And I'll hate myself
My game is always, how big can I get that number by Friday morning at 7 a.m.? That's
a great game. It's a good game.
Of like... That's my fixed part. I can't change the time.
But I don't change the time either, to be clear.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty fastidious about always doing that Wednesday night distribution. Right. But
I just mean yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I just feel part of me is just like I've been barely managing to hit this target for like 2.5 years and miraculously I've had a good week with a few jobs landing at once, and like I want to ride this, but I know I shouldn't. Anyway,
you know what's great about it though, when that happens, like through our sale month, is it going to look at the accounts and being like, can I pay? And it's like, whoa,
can I pay? Oh, there's the bill? A mistake. Oh, yeah.
There's too much money in the lease account. What is... Oh, no, that's just good. I can pay payroll 3 times? What?
You work with raw percentages, though, don't you?
I wish there was a way to do some fixed situations. That would be nice. Like, max out one number and then... like kind of like what Saunders keeps talking about with the waterfall, where you're like, I filled this account up, now go top up.
I guess...
bonuses for the year, whatever your number is.
That's kind of more how mine works in terms of my dates. So like if I put this amount into next week's distribution, it's still just going to put a week's worth of payroll in the payroll account, and it's still just going to do a week's worth of OPEX into the OPEX account, but it's going to put it's going to put 50% into materials and freight, which is just going to bloat that account, which is okay because I'll manually adjust from it if I need to down the track. But yeah, I don't know
what maybe the answer, which we're not used to because we like this little micromanagement thing we used to do, like what's safer for the business?
It's
letting it happen.
Letting it happen, because then it keeps the sales pressure on me and then I'll be compelled to hit budget the week after.
Right
If I still had a business coach, my business coach would be like, don't stop selling, Jam, just because you had a good week. You got to keep Keep at it. So I know that's the answer. I just don't want to.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, that's my story. Do you need to go?
Soon. I have a little.
Soon.
They've really just changed this so much. Here we go.
What?
It's time for things we love.
My ears.
I can't help that. I'm sorry. Or maybe I'll tell you to take your ears out first. So I discovered a new YouTube channel, and I've only watched a couple, but this person has like four videos named Rabbit Hole. Four videos? Not even that many. Yeah, four videos, and they have 280,000 subscribers. And the video I found first of theirs was called The Lorem Ipsum Mystery.
And cool.
I'm assuming you've played a little bit with, like, you know what Lorem Ipsum is, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I without getting into explaining it much, but it's Lorem Ipsum is basically a mystery. I didn't know this. I always thought like, oh, it's Latin or something. And it's just such a good little like discovery process. She talks to the person that helped popularize it and then eventually figures out basically it's history. And that was undocumented prior. It was like, oh, it was created centuries ago and we don't really know where from, but she figures it out.
Cool. Really?
And it's good. It's like the 20-minute video and it's her fourth video ever. It's like
amazing.
It's so good.
All right, yeah, check that out.
That's my recommendation.
Good tip.
It's good. Good. Thank you. Video.
Gosh, I didn't know we were doing recommendations. Here I am scrabbling. Sorry. No.
Is your recommendation work safe?
My recommendation is get more sleep, kids.
Yeah, me too.
Get more sleep. Best thing I last watched on YouTube was, I don't know, nothing. Got no highlights. No highlights in that department. Yeah.
That's right.
Get more sleep. Cool.
Yep.
Get out of here, man.
I should go.
Yep. Good to see you.
Go make your disbursements.
No, next week. I'll try and get it higher by Wednesday. So it's even more compelling to mess with it. Okay. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Should be easy, right?
He sent a blurry picture from the front seat of his truck. Said the old one broke and now the whole thing stuck. No drawing, no dimensions, just a quarter for scale. And a text that said, buddy, I need this without fail. He said it's just a little bracket, just a little plate. Just a tiny piece of metal, shouldn't take you late. I stared into the photo like a cold dark sea. And the photo stared back and it laughed at me. There's a hole that might be threaded. There's an edge that might be bent. There's a radius from somewhere and a tolerance he meant. It's a $40 part with a $500 shadow. 10-minute job if you don't count tomorrow.